Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, we're talking about a challenge to President Trump from the right, a Republican challenge to President Trump. Very, very tough to pull off. But former Congressman Joe Walsh thinks that somebody's got to step up. Nobody stepped up, so he's stepping up. 10 days ago, he announced he's running for president. We talked to him about it. He said he was surprised by how much attention he's gotten. And it was interesting to talk to him about where he agrees with President Trump, where he disagrees with President Trump, some of his past controversial racist statements he admits are racist, and why he's doing this. So we have him on the show this week. We also have, as our panel to talk about him and talk about more, Jessica Yellen, one of the smartest journalists out there, Alicia Krauss, conservative commentator, and for the first time, comedian Carlos Mencia. But let's begin with Joe Walsh. All right, well, we've asked every presidential candidate the same question to start off, and we'll ask it to you. Why you?
Why me? Look, this isn't an easy thing to do, and running for president, this is the first time I've done this. I genuinely believe Donald Trump's a bad guy. I think he's a danger to this country. I think he's unfit to be president. I've been hoping, Alex, all year that a Republican would step up. A Republican didn't step up to make this case. I did 10 days ago, and I will.
You backed Donald Trump in 2016.
Yes.
You said he was better than Hillary Clinton at the time. Do you think our country would be better off today if Hillary Clinton was president?
It's a good question. I don't know. I know that I regret that vote, and I know that I regret supporting Donald Trump in 2016. I don't know that I would have supported Hillary. Look, I didn't love Trump. I didn't like Trump. He wasn't Hillary. I thought he was a goof, and maybe he'd hire a couple good people, and a couple good things might happen. But Alex, man, after a few months of him in the White House, it became clear to me that almost every time he opens his mouth, he tells a lie. You can't handle that. None of us can.
So to run for president, my old political science professor liked to say that you need three things: money, organization, and message. Mom, well, hear your message. I'm not Donald Trump. Yeah. I can do this better. But in terms of money and organization, the White House already doing some things to try to stop you.
Yes.
There's moves this weekend in South Carolina, Nevada, Arizona, and Kansas to get rid of the Republican primary altogether. There will be no vote in that state, meaning that you can't get any delegates. What's your response to that, and how do you fight that?
I don't know if I can say bull, you know what, on the air. It's absolute BS. You talk about undemocratic. So here's the president of the United States, this big, tough, strong guy, right? He wants to eliminate elections. That's what you're talking about, Alex. Eliminate primary elections in four states. It's undemocratic. It's wrong. And remember in 2016, Trump talked all the time about how the system was rigged against Bernie. Mm-hmm. Trump's rigging the system this year because he doesn't want a primary opponent.
So what can you do?
We're going to fight it. Yeah. We're right now, as we speak, we're going directly to voters in those four states. Again, Kansas, Arizona, Nevada, and South Carolina, telling them to speak out against the Republican Party. And we've got good people, lawyers, who are going to look into any way that they can fight this, because it's Alex, you're talking about eliminating elections. Mm-hmm. You can't get more undemocratic than that.
So let's also talk about your organization and your money. Yeah. How's the fundraising going? Where are you at on that? And where are you at in terms of organization? Are you opening offices in places like Iowa, New Hampshire?
We're getting there. So we launched 10 days ago. We've been blown away by the amount of grassroots fundraising in this first week. But I'm not going to have Trump's money. He's got God's money. I know that. But we're going into New Hampshire starting tomorrow. We'll be in Iowa. We'll be in every state in the country. And I got to tell you, Alex, look, I'm no great shakes necessarily. But somebody needed a Republican needed to make this case against Trump. And I've been blown away by the amount of the outpouring of people who are signing on to this effort, because I think they believe the same thing I do, that Trump's unfit.
So have any high profile Republicans vowed to
no.
back you?
No. And they won't, because they're afraid.
So why are they wrong? Why are 80%, 90% of Republicans that back President Trump, why are they wrong?
Well, two things. I think that support's soft. And remember, a lot of people left the Republican Party. We want to bring them back. They left the Republican Party because of Trump. Look, right now, Trump has destroyed the Republican brand. Our campaign slogan is "Be Brave." Because I believe, Alex, that most Republicans privately agree with what I'm saying publicly. They don't want four more years of this guy. The cruel tweets every morning, the guy who thinks he's above the law, the lies, the drama. I think most Republicans privately don't want that. We're going to try to get them to come out and be public.
So let's talk a little bit about your record. You've been pretty open about the fact that you've said some things in the past that were racist.
Absolutely.
And that you regret.
Yeah.
Some of that being saying that Barack Obama was a Kenyan, saying that he was a Muslim. When you said that, what was going through your mind?
And it's a great point, and I want to be really clear about this, because part of this announcement has been I helped create Trump. I went to Washington in 2010. I was part of the Tea Party class. We wanted to raise hell and do something about all the government spending. But over the course of the last 8-9 years, Alex, oftentimes that issue got away from us. And I can speak for myself. Oftentimes I got personal and hateful about Obama and people who disagreed with me politically. I think a lot of that hate led to this guy in the White House, because he's the worst iteration of all of us.
I mean, but did you honestly think that Barack
No.
Obama was, or you're just like, I'm going to manipulate people's racism and play on that?
No, and I never got into the whole birther thing from the beginning. I did say on my radio show that Barack Obama was a Muslim. It was a terrible thing to say. I've apologized for saying it. You know, a lot of us got caught up in the conservative media thing, and you try to be as outrageous as you can. I stepped in it there. It was a horrible, ugly thing to say. But here's something that's kind of cool. I'm with you apologizing for it.
Yeah.
This guy in the White House has never apologized for a damn thing.
Another thing you said that was sort of controversial was this comment about the president, and if he would lose, that you got to get your musket ready.
Ah, the musket.
Yeah, which was something that you tweeted out. We can put that up on the screen. On November 8th, I'm voting Trump. On November 9th, Trump loses. I'm grabbing my musket. Clearly, he didn't lose, so you didn't need to grab your musket. But let's talk about the issue of guns, though, and sort of where we go right now.
Yeah.
Do you believe that we need more gun control in this country? And if so, what does that look like?
I'm a big Second Amendment guy. I'm a big gun guy. I do think we need to look at two areas right now. And I'm not saying, Alex, they'll do a lot of help, but look, the American people, universal background checks. If I buy a gun from a gun dealer, I got to get a background check. If you're my friend and you sell me a gun, I should have to get a background check too. So I think we need to look at universal background checks. Red flag laws. People who are mentally screwed up or through their own behavior have demonstrated they shouldn't have a gun. That should be an area, if closely tailored, that both sides can come to agreement on.
Let's go through another round of issues. Hopefully we can do this sort of rapid-fire style. The Republican tax cut. You've said that the deficit has gotten a little bit out of control. A lot of people think that the Republican tax cut is a big reason for that. Do you think the Republican tax cut was a good thing? And if you're in office, would you raise taxes on the wealthy to try to combat the deficit?
I would have had a bigger tax cut, and I would have cut taxes for middle-class Americans. Look, we're bankrupting our kids and our grandkids because of spending, not because of tax cuts. It's a spending thing. Both parties spend like drunken sailors.
So what do you cut?
You got to have a big boy and a big girl conversation about the entitlements, Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid. That right there eats up most of the federal budget.
Other issues, build a wall. The president says he wants to build a wall. Mexico will pay for it. Obviously, Mexico isn't paying for it.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's value in building a wall? And if so, who pays for it?
Yeah, a wall, a border barrier should be part of securing the border, but the American people should pay for it. We should pay for it. The problem with Trump is that's all he talks about. That's all he's ever talked about is a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. It was a lie to begin with.
Let's talk about tariffs. Right now, there's a bit of a dispute between the U.S. and China. Do you think the tariffs that are being put on are helpful right now?
No, wrong, ugly, and hurting the American people. And, Alex, leading us into a recession. Trump blew it from the beginning. We know China cheats. What Trump should have done is bring the whole world together to united go against China. But Trump gets elected, and he, like, throws tariffs down against everybody.
One of the issues that Republicans point to that they're happiest with the president is the judiciary.
Yeah.
Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh. Good justices?
Yes.
Do you like what's happening in terms of the judiciary?
Yeah, and what I've tried, yes. And at lower levels, the Trump administration has appointed good conservative justices. There are things that Trump has done that I've supported. Mm-hmm. The bottom line, though, Alex, this isn't about issues. It's about him, the man. He's bad for America.
Let's talk about you, the man, for a bit as well. Radio talk show host, also a social worker in the past. I don't know many presidential candidates that have that experience. How did that experience shape your views and shape your approach to issues?
I worked in the inner city in Chicago a while ago, on the south side of Chicago, trying to improve education educational opportunities for low-income minority kids. I am obsessed with the issue of race. It's something I talk a lot about. And I'm obsessed with improving educational opportunities for low-income folks. I believe in school choice.
Let's do something and have a little bit of fun. It's called the name game here on the show. This is where we do different names of high-profile people. There's a little Beyonce. And we're looking for one word to go with these people. Okay, you ready?
Yo.
Here we go. This is where we may or may not get in trouble. President Donald Trump.
A liar.
Vice President Mike Pence.
Too acquiescent.
Former President George W. Bush.
Good man.
Former President Barack Obama.
A good man.
Former Vice President Joe Biden.
He needs to sort of... A nice guy who maybe has been around too long. Wow, that was more than one word.
That was. Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Energetic, great campaigner.
And the Eagles guitarist Joe Walsh.
A good close friend. No. The more famous Joe Walsh.
Have you heard from him in this whole thing?
We've gone back and forth at each other on social media. I hope to break bread and have a cocktail with him one of these days.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? All right, we also do a game called Personal Issues. This is where we put 30 seconds on the clock, and we get to know you a little bit better. Okay, here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
Favorite book?
I love F. Scott Fitzgerald and Hemingway, probably The Great Gatsby.
Favorite nickname?
Oh, my God, Rocky.
Do you have a favorite Disney movie?
All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Favorite candy?
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Ooh, that's a good one. Favorite meal?
Spaghetti and meatballs.
Favorite holiday?
Thanksgiving.
Beer or wine?
Neither. Tequila.
Tequila?
This is actually difficult. Tequila.
Who's your role model?
My role model, both my mom and dad passed away within the last year and a half. They were my life. I loved them.
And last question, favorite Eagles song?
Got to be Hotel California.
Hotel California. Well, you're in California.
I'm in California.
Our thanks to Joe Walsh and our thanks to Joe Walsh, the guitarist, as well. Our love for Hotel California. So our panel this week, Jessica Yellen. She was a CNN, ABC correspondent, White House correspondent, very well known. She wrote a book called Savage News. She's got a new venture called News Not Noise. Alicia Krauss with The Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro's company, conservative commentary. Carlos Mencia, of course, you know from Mind of Mencia on Comedy Central, has a podcast called Journey with Carlos Mencia, performing at the Irvine Improv, carlosmencia.com. We talked about a lot of things, but we start by talking about the state of the Republican Party, especially after hearing from Joe Walsh. Here's what they had to say. Alicia, you're a conservative. You weren't a fan of President Trump before. You've liked some of the stuff that he's done since. What did you make of what Joe Walsh had to say? Is he somebody that you could support?
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I was never Trump in 2016. A lot of the things I had issues with were some of the things that Joe has brought up, and I think that that's something that you're seeing statistically. Republican women and moderate women are still having issues with the president. They don't trust him. They don't like what he's saying. But the bottom line is, do they like how he's governing? And as you pointed out in that interview with him, 80 to 90% of Republicans are saying that they support the president at this point. And unless the Democrats actually have something better than the failed Russian investigation that they tried and didn't do so well at, I don't know that any Republican is going to be able to withstand, you know, the Trump machine.
But would you vote for Joe Walsh over Donald Trump?
At this point, I don't think so. Because, I mean, listen, I voted for Evan McMullen. I wrote him in the state of California, mainly because Mindy Finn is a dear friend, and I think she would have been an incredible vice president. But I don't see myself pulling the lever for Joe. Sorry, Joe. I like him personally. I like him personally. I've known him for a long time. Used to work for the radio company that, you know, he had a show with in Chicago. So we know a lot of the same people. I think he's a good guy. I just don't see myself voting for him.
Jessica, he's not the only Republican running. Right now, there's also Bill Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts, possibly Mark Sanford, the former governor and congressman from South Carolina. Any of these guys have any chance at all?
No. I mean, just no. You know, President Trump is wildly popular within his own party. The next election will be decided by independents and undecided voters. The purpose of having people challenge him in this primary is to create a dialogue and to have more of the Republican Party as it had been represented. There's so many that are disaffected. The challenge is who's running. I thought that there was something absolutely astonishing that former Congressman Walsh said, which was he so easily acknowledged that when he called Obama a Muslim, he didn't mean it, that it was just part of the Republican or the right-wing media machine, and that it's just something that is done. I think, I respect his apology, I think he has a campaign or a message if he goes further and adds a little more oxygen to that discussion. How much of what we're hearing from that machine is similarly conveniently said for ratings at the moment without belief?
But you have that on the left as well. And I mean, coming from talk radio, there are people in talk radio that are genuine in their beliefs and their principles that don't say outrageous and racist things. And so, I think
there's a question of degree, quantity, and mass. I mean, right. To the left, the right is wildly more aggressive.
And Carlos. And the difference in the left and the right is, on the left, it's more policy-driven. It's more about, are we going to go with Elizabeth Warren? Are we going to go with a conservative? Are we going to try to bring out young people of color to overcome the 60, 70,000 votes in those three states and ignore, you know, the white underprivileged person that they're going for and just say, no, we're going to bring these out. Whereas to in the other point, in the other, it's more about what he says and how he says it and how he behaves.
I'm not arguing with that at all.
But that's the issue.
I think it's an area, you know, Kristen Solte Sanderson is an incredible Republican pollster, and she talks about this all the time.
Yeah.
The Republicans and the conservative movement specifically, because I don't consider myself Alicia Krauss with an R after my name. I consider myself just, you know, I'm more than me is just the Republican after my name. And I think that Republicans and the conservative movement for a very long time has done incredibly poorly on addressing those people and those other voters. And they can't now even rely on me, a married Republican woman who statistically in the past have voted for Republican presidential candidates.
But so when you see 80%, right, when you see 80% of the party following him, he is the Republican Party.
I did agree with Joe in that any president, Barack Obama was the head of the Republican Party at that time.
Yeah.
Whoever is the nominee for the Democrats is going to be the head of the Democratic Party.
I think the point, though, is when you talk about the policies themselves, a lot of what President Trump has done when it comes to tariffs, when it comes to North Korea, when it comes to different aspects
in
the country.
A lot of conservatives aren't happy about.
But they're still backing them, 80, 90%.
Because
and a lot of them are still.
What's on the other side? Right? You have people that are literally saying that they're going to continue to take plastic straws away and not focus on school choice.
You have people
that are saying that they're okay with killing babies in utero because it might save the planet.
Do you think somebody
look at the other extreme, a lot of people are doing the hold your nose and vote for Donald Trump because look at what the alternative is.
But Carlos, do you think somebody like a Ronald Reagan would even be able to be elected these days in a Republican primary?
No, I mean, you have John Kasich, who I think on the opposite side is somebody that independents would have voted for, and he's not getting in, not because he doesn't want to be president. He's done it before. He's put himself out there on CNN.
Right.
He just knows that it's not the right time. He's not going to win. I mean, we're talking about three guys running right now that have zero chance of winning. The only thing that they can do is somewhat, and I think this is positive for the Republican Party, to normalize a different type of behavior, mm-hmm. to say, because what I hear is, well, yeah, President Trump, blank, 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 but who else is going to do what he did? So what I'm hearing is that there's no other Republican person that could run for president that has the ideals that Republicans would like other than Donald Trump.
There are a lot of them out there, but statistically, we all know that it's very hard to beat an incumbent.
This is a different argument. Yeah. You made a false binary before, which is Republicans like Trump because on the other side it's plastic straws and democratic socialists.
Right.
There is an absolute truth that right now Trump is flatly popular within the Republican Party
because
by members who are willing
that he's implemented that and are willing
to overlook.
A lot of people didn't think that he would.
Well, he campaigned on them, so he said he would do it.
He campaigned on building the wall, and he hasn't done that yet.
He's on his way right now.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, let's see what happens with the economy and if that support collapses.
And let's talk here in the state of California. This weekend, the Republicans are having their statewide convention in the Palm Desert area. Not in a great state right now in terms of no sort of high-profile statewide elected Republicans. The Democrats have supermajorities in both houses here. Where does the Republican Party of California go?
I mean, I don't know. What do you do if you're in California and you're Republican? I do think that it's emerging, and this is an opportunity. Look, the Republican Party will be a different reality after President Trump. Right now, he controls it. Post-Trump, who knows? California Republicans have an opportunity to define what that future conservative movement looks like that corrects for some of what he's done with the Latino community and what he's done to alienate women in particular. the environment.
What do you think?
I think that the Republican GOP should really run on school choice. It's an issue here in this state that affects everyone. Everyone, whether you're a single mother in South LA or a married mother in Beverly Hills, like wherever you are, school choice is an issue that actually polls incredibly well with women on the other side of the aisle and minority women. And it's an issue that, to me, we should be caring for the children in utero to the day they die, and providing a good education and giving parents the opportunity to give their children the education they want is something the Republican GOP should run with.
Last word to you, Carlos, because one of the moments that the Republican Party sort of lost power in California is what happened with Prop 187 back in the day with Pete Wilson and what they did in terms of Latinos in this state.
Well, you know, the Latino vote is one of those big, big votes that nobody really has a handle on at this point. But, I mean, you know, we're talking about California, where Republican stronghold in Orange County was unprecedented, and the amount of red that went blue just in that stronghold because of women, it's astonishing. And so it all goes back to, at the end of the day, where is the Republican Party going to be after Trump, whether it's this or that? And will they be able to say, listen, we didn't like Trump, blah, blah, blah? Or are they going to be branded with Trumpisms for how long? For how long is the, well, you're racist, you're anti-Latino, you're anti-this, you're anti-that? How long is that going to last? That's where you guys are at. And that's the difficult part of being a Republican conservative.
And we continue our panel discussion by talking about the issue of guns. This week, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors had this controversial vote where they said that the NRA, the National Rifle Association, is a domestic terrorist organization. The NRA clearly didn't like that. They said, no, we're not. And by the way, San Francisco should focus on all of its problems, including drugs and homelessness and everything else that's there. But it kind of brings up the bigger question about guns, what to do about guns. But let's start with, is what San Francisco doing even right? Take a listen. Is that going too far, San Francisco?
Yes, of course. We have a Second Amendment, all right? I think that the issue that really nobody's talking about is this. Do we want guns for militias the way it was written, or is it now transferred into, you know, protecting your home? And if it's still a militia-based thing, they weren't going to have difficulties getting rid of weapons of war, because a militia is supposed to have weapons of war. That's the whole point. If anything happens, they come up, they get. But if we don't believe in that anymore, then I believe that all of these other issues come into play. But one state doing something, it doesn't matter, because you can go to another state and, you know, buy whatever you want to buy, bring
Except
it over. It's illegal, but you know.
You can't bring it over. I mean, when I moved
you're
to the state of California.
You're not supposed to bring it over.
When I moved to the state of California 7 years ago, there was an 8-week waiting period for me to change the clip in my Glock 19, because it had the ability to have 17 bullets, and California only allows me to have 10.
I would argue that Americans are not having a hard time getting guns. So we don't have to start with a conversation in that space. I think that this resolution is a statement. It doesn't do anything with, doesn't have teeth.
It's an outrageous statement. I mean, the KKK is
even
of
the NRA.
I'm not a fan of the NRA. I'm not a member of the NRA, but I am a law-abiding gun owner, and I find it offensive for them. Who is going to be next? What group is going to be next where they might say, oh, well, we don't agree with what you're propaganda is. Sure, you can name it propaganda, fine, but last I checked, that's protected under the First Amendment.
The challenge is
I think that when you have outrageous and racist organizations like the KKK, whose members have actually murdered people in the past, is not even labeled a domestic terror organization, and this lady up there in San Francisco isn't, why are you doing that with the NRA?
What is Mitch McConnell doing? What's happening in the California City Council in San Francisco, or whether what we call the NRA, is less relevant than will the majority leader of the Senate bring a vote on some of these gun safety measures that are wildly popular with the American people?
Is there political incentive for him to do that right now?
There is intense political incentive, which is that the American people overwhelmingly support expanded universal background checks. The challenge is that the NRA, as a lobbying organization, seems to have a stranglehold on those members and the leader, which is part of the reason there's so much anger directed at the NRA.
I think the beautiful part of our our country is that Mitch McConnell, as the speaker, doesn't just answer to the country as a whole, but he's going home and saying, hey, what do my local constituents want? And that's what other Republican senators are doing. And I think really when you get down to the nitty-gritty of it,
89% of Republicans support expanded background checks. That's a wildly
popular figure. Joe Walsh just supported expanded background checks here on the show.
But then how come it doesn't get done? Statistically, these things always, the polls happen, and then Congress doesn't do anything, and people forget about it.
Money, capture by the NRA.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, the most extreme position that is being pushed right now in the Democratic primary is Beto O'Rourke, who wants to have a gun buyback program, a mandatory program. Here's what he has to say.
The most effective gun control measures have been gun licenses and mandatory buyback programs like they did in Australia. Would you be open to those proposals as president?
Yes, and I'm open to them right now as a candidate. Absolutely has to be part of the conversation. And if at the end of the day, it's going to save lives, if it's going to prevent the kind of tragedies that we saw in El Paso or Gilroy or Dayton or this weekend in Chicago or all over this country on a daily basis, then let's move forward and do it.
Not everybody likes that idea, including Meghan McCain on The View. Here was her response to that.
There's a lot of people on TV talking about guns that clearly have never shot a gun, don't know the difference between a semi-assault rifle and assault rifle. Vice President Biden, as you were saying, he actually said that he wants to have a complete and total assault weapons ban. Mm-hmm. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives doesn't even define the term assault weapon, so that could basically mean any gun. And I will just say, this is a ground-level issue for me. If you're going to be a gun grabber, you don't get my vote.
So a lot of anger at this concept even of having a mandatory gun buyback. Jessica, you've covered Capitol Hill, you've covered the White House, you understand how the incentive system works. Do you see anything happening when it comes to gun? Anything at all?
There's a possibility. I think that there has been no possibility for the longest time, and there's a slight amount of oxygen now simply because there's a generation of kids who've grown up having these school drills, and the pressure they're putting on their parents and the demand for change in the future is so intense that politicians are starting to recognize it. But again, the capture I talked about earlier means it might not happen for a few years.
Universal background checks, do you support it?
Absolutely.
And what do you want to see happen on guns?
Well, look, when 90% of Americans want anything done, anything, and the system of governance doesn't do that, that's just anti-American. A government of and by and for the people, they should listen to what 90% of us want. And when that doesn't happen, you have to look to the NRA, and you have to look to the lobbyists, and you have to look to all of this stuff. We all get it. You know, we all feel the pain, and we also all are tired of praying for dead people.
I do have to add, though, that here in California, for example, you do have a background check. You do have a waiting period. And unfortunately, we still have awful murderous atrocities like Santa Barbara, Santa Monica, and San Bernardino, where you still have people that. So it is interesting that as much as the NRA lobbies, you do have a collective on the left and anti-2A people who seemingly use these awful tragedies to try to push their anti-2A agenda. But or when there are laws already on the books, they didn't prevent
those things. By the tragedies and want to take action. I mean, laws don't prevent crime. They help limit it.
Absolutely. Yeah. But you know what else helps limit crime? My gun being able to protect me and my family.
Well, you have that right.
Okay. And our final discussion with our panel is about the topic of the Democratic debate. Next week, all 10 Democrats are going to be, the top 10 Democrats are going to be on the same stage for the first time. So we'll see Joe Biden versus Elizabeth Warren. We'll see Mayor Pete. We'll see all of them as the field sort of winnows down. It's going to be a big debate on ABC. So we are talking about that and what our panelists expect. What are you looking for this week?
First of all, more policy-based questions, and will they have a chance, the time to actually answer? Will we see Warren and Bernie Sanders go after each other at all, or will it still be hands-off? And who's willing to take on Biden, and is he able to respond effectively?
I'm going to be watching Joe Biden, and I'm so glad I'm able to drink now because it's really funny as a Republican voter to just sit back and watch these guys duke it out.
Yeah.
I hate the format. It just doesn't give you enough time to really, especially on policy-based questions. It's a soundbite-driven forum. I thought that they should have split it up 5 and 5 and done two different nights instead. But I think that this is just going to be them trying to hit those little moments right now every candidate is trying to find what that one sentence thing is going to be to make it over. I think that all this is going to be just like every other election. First two states, primaries come out, who's on top, all the rest fall, those two or three go at it, and then we'll have it. I think it's just, what is the soul of the party?
Yeah.
That's the problem. Are they going for the left or are they going for the center?
And around the horn back this way, who do you think would be the strongest Democratic nominee?
Oh, it's tough, man. I have no idea right now. I think that they're, you know, Pete's got a good thing to say. I think Biden, we love him, but he's the old man that we're all like, oh, he's going to crash now. He's going to crash. I'm just waiting for that moment where somebody goes, oh, there's Grandpa. Oh, you know, so Elizabeth is really fired up. But, you know, from looking from the center out, she's way out there and she's a dangerous candidate. So we'll see what happens, man. But the good thing is, there is a plethora and a large amount of people, very varied in that group, and they're giving different parts of who they are and different parts to America, and I think that's a good thing.
Quickly, who do you guys think would be the strongest nominee?
Against Donald Trump?
Yeah.
I think Joe Biden, and I think Joe Biden could have beat him in 2016. But I think that Elizabeth Warren at this point is looking pretty strong and could make it through the primaries.
I won't say who I think is strongest, but I will say that for 4 months I've said Elizabeth Warren will be the nominee. I believe that she is against the odds. The media doesn't like her. Men over 50 don't like her. Wall Street doesn't like her. She keeps rising because the people on the ground are connecting with her because she's a strong organization and a message. I don't know that that means she'll beat Trump. I think it means she has a good shot at the nomination.
Well, very interesting. And Alicia, we hope you enjoy your drinking game on Thursday.
Tweet me your ideas.
Cheers,
like, what
cheers to a Biden gap. That should be a
shot. Be very drunk.
And so that's all for this week. Our thanks to Jessica Yellen, to Alicia Krauss, to Carlos Mencia, and to former Congressman Joe Walsh. But most of all, thank you so much for listening. I want to let you know, we did a really cool, interesting sit-down with Carlos Mencia talking about him growing up as one of 18 kids. What is that actually logistically like? Growing up in East L.A. as an immigrant from Honduras, having no Latino role models in the comedy world, making it despite all of that, education issues, politics of Latinos. Really, really fascinating conversation. I love talking to him. I learned a lot. Made me think differently about some stuff. So that you can download right now on the Issue Is podcast as well. If you go back into our archives a little bit, you can see a conversation with Jessica Yellen, which is really cool, talking about her book and also talking about her time as a White House correspondent and cable news and sort of taking you behind the scenes there. We hope that you will rate and review us. Please leave us 5 stars. We appreciate that. And thanks to those who have. Send me an email, alexmichelson@gmail.com. If you want to share your comments, we love hearing feedback. And we appreciate you taking the time to listen to The Issue Is. So next week, we will break down that debate and have more. But for this week, I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening.